Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hi, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us on this journey of discovery across the world of the 007 movies.
As we take an encyclopedic look at cinema's greatest spy films.
We'll learn about the people who made them in front of the camera and behind.
From Ken Adam to Max Zorin, with occasional detour down a few rabbit holes. And we'll sometimes be joined by guests with unique insight into the world of Bond.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the James Bond brand, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we do get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. If you want to support the podcast, we have a coffee page at ko-fi.com/JamesBondATOZ, and you can find the link in the show notes. Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, where M is for Miss Moneypenny, the secretary to M, Bond's boss, who has appeared in 23 of the 25 official James Bond films, and also both the unofficial James Bond films. My name is Tom Butler, and joining me as we take a look at this indispensable Bond character is a man who's never taken me to dinner dressed like this. In fact, he's never taken me to dinner at all. It's Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello.
That's a lie. He has taken you to dinner.
He has, yeah. And I know he'd like to ditch the usual repartee because he's in a hurry. It's a man who knows how to cook a beautiful angel cake. It's Mr. Tom Wheatley.
Hello there.
Do you?
I could do. They're not that hard, are they?
Right. Can't imagine so. So, pop quiz, guys. Which of the two Eon Bond films does Moneypenny not appear in?
Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Quantum.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That was an easy one. But let's kick things off. So we're going to talk about Moneypenny. But when you think of Moneypenny, who do you think of?
Lois Maxwell every time.
Yeah, Lois Maxwell.
Yeah. Maybe to a point, Samantha as well. Samantha Bond.
Why, like, what is it about Lois Maxwell? I guess it's because she did the most, right? She did 14 films as Moneypenny. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think, yeah, but I don't think it is just that. I think it's because she is just fantastic, especially in the early films. The relationship she has with Bond is just spot on with what you want from that relationship. It's like it's funny, it's playful, but it's still it's believable as well.
Yeah, it's not just because she's done the most. It is because of the relationship, and you know, she had the relationship with Connery, and then the relationship with Roger Moore. It just felt like she was a staple of those films, a constant, wasn't she?
Like Desmond Llewellyn as Q, like Bernard Lee as M, yeah,
yes,
Lois Maxwell as Moneypenny was part of the original fixtures and fittings, wasn't she, of the series?
Yeah,
and so I think that's natural to associate the two. But also, I think having watched, I think a lot of us are doing, going to the cinema and seeing the Bond films on the big screen, a lot of us seeing them for the first time, but seeing Lois Maxwell as Moneypenny in Dr. No and From Russia with Love, it seems like that it's the most pure version, or the version that I think Moneypenny is meant to be. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. I think they cast those two to work together. So they were designed to work together, and they really got that casting right. She is the perfect counterpart to Connery because she's just charming enough and just playful enough with him for it to really work. It looks like they do have a fondness for each other. But also, you can kind of see that it could work. You know, they could actually be in a relationship from those early ones because you think it works quite well. I think in the later films, that doesn't quite work because they don't tend to... like with Roger as well, she was never hired to work with Roger. So that didn't quite work. But I think that's just, yeah, it's just perfect in that first one. And I don't think they've ever really matched it. Maybe to an extent, Brosnan and Bond, Samantha Bond.
Yeah, the irony is that... Lois Maxwell did have a prior relationship with Roger Moore. They'd trained together at RADA. Another irony is that when Lois Maxwell was cast in Dr. No, she was offered the chance to play Sylvia Trench and rejected it to play Moneypenny instead. And like I said, she went on to play the role in 14 films. But did you know that Lois Maxwell only appeared for a total of 20 minutes in the James Bond films? And according to Roger Moore,
something about that,
spoke fewer than 200 words throughout the whole series.
But what words they were.
Well, I imagine there's a lot of overlap. It'd be interesting how many unique words that was. Probably like 40.
Yeah. I'm sure someone's done it. Yep. I don't know if I want to know the answer.
But I thought it was quite interesting that was the case with her. As like I said, we all consider her to be the iconic Moneypenny. I mean, there may be people out there who see Naomi Harris as the quintessential Moneypenny now, but we'll get to that. But I feel like it's a very different relationship between the two. Now, Fleming, I don't know if you knew this, referred to Moneypenny as his second favourite character in the James Bond books, behind Bond, of course, which, again, I thought was very, very interesting. And we'll come to the origins of the character and why perhaps he felt such fondness for her in a second. But another pop quiz question. Do you know Moneypenny's first name?
Only in the most recent films.
And in the diaries. Jane.
Yeah. So there's two, isn't there? Yeah. So in the recent films, it's Eve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in the diaries, a book which was published, a spin-off book, it was Jane. So, I guess it just shows that there's, as we discovered with the James Bond lexicon, there's obviously lots of different versions of these characters, and the canon is all over the place with these things. But yeah, so she's obviously a hugely important character. We'll try and do her justice here. We will have talked about Moneypenny in lots of different episodes as well. So we'll cover in pretty much every film episode apart from Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. So if you want to learn more about Moneypenny beyond this, then hit up our film specials. Right, let's dive in and look at the origin of Moneypenny. So this is her introduction in Casino Royale, the very first Ian Fleming James Bond book. It said, Miss Moneypenny would have been desirable, but for her eyes, which were cool and direct and quizzical. And so later, talking to Lois Maxwell, Ian Fleming said, when I wrote Miss Moneypenny, I envisioned her as a tall, elegant woman with the most kissable lips in the world. You are her. But who or what was the inspiration for the character? So in the early drafts of Casino Royale, Miss Moneypenny's name is Petty Pettival. And that name is said to have been inspired by a lady called Kathleen Pettigrew, who was the secretary to the longtime head of MI6, a guy called Stuart Menzies. That was changed in later drafts of the books to Miss Moneypenny. And the name Moneypenny may or may not have come from an unpublished book written by his brother, Peter Fleming. I think it's called The Set, S-E-T-T. But that book was never published. But there is a character in that called Miss Moneypenny as well. So Now, there's a number of different real-life people who are said to have inspired the character. There's no definitive person who she's said to be based on. So I'll just run through some of them here. So one of them that inspired Moneypenny is a lady called Vera Atkins, who was a Romanian-born woman who was the assistant to section head Colonel Morris Buckmaster at the Special Operations Executive during World War II. She was an intelligence officer just through her role. She actually recruited and trained a lot of the operatives who performed spy operations during World War II. So that's one person. Another one is a lady called Dame Victoire Risdale, known as Paddy. And she was one of Fleming's colleagues at the Naval Intelligence Department, again, during World War II. And Fleming, apparently, when he was on his travels during World War II, he, like Bond, he would often bring her back silk stockings and lipsticks. So you can see there's possibly a few people here who inspired the character. Someone else is a lady called Joan Bright, who is a lady that Fleming dated in World War II. From 1941, she was basically responsible for the Special Information Centre in the Cabinet War Rooms, supplying confidential information to the Commanders-in-Chief, including Churchill. Someone else is cited as an inspiration is a lady called Joan Howe, who was Fleming's secretary at the Times, and she typed up the manuscript of Casino Royale. So that one, to me, seems a bit questionable, because if he'd already written her in Casino Royale, how could she be the inspiration for the character? But I guess he already knew her before then. Yeah, that's a few of the people that have claimed the character is based on. I mean, in the book, the relationship between Bond and Moneypenny is sort of strictly professional. But there's just a sort of understanding between Moneypenny and Bond that she just understands him in a way that no one else does. And in later books, there's a sort of a romantic chemistry sort of starts to build between them that's never acted on. And that becomes the basis for the character in the films. In the books also, he's got a secretary called Luella Ponsonby, who sort of has a similar role to Moneypenny. And in the films, I think they sort of amalgamate the two of them. But that's the origins of the fictional Miss Moneypenny. But let's have a look at the movie versions.
So the first movie version was played by Lois Maxwell. Just going to touch on Lois Maxwell's career. She was born Lois Hooker, and she grew up in Ontario in Canada. And so early on, when she was 15, she actually ran away from home and she enlisted in the Canadian Army. And she became part of the Army Entertainment Corps. So she would travel through Europe during the Second World War. And they would perform dance numbers and they would do songs to entertain the troops. Upon returning to London, so the group she was part of got to London, they discovered her actual age. And so she didn't have to go back to Canada, she was discharged and enrolled at RADA, where she became friends with Roger Moore. She completed that, and then when she was 19 or 20, she moved to Hollywood, where she had relative sort of early success in a supporting role in a film called That Hagen Girl, which also starred Shirley Temple and Ronald Reagan. She actually won Most Promising Newcomer at the Golden Globes. And then moving forward, she was in Lolita in 1961. Do either of you remember that, her role in that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And then she was in, throughout the 60s, she was in shows like The Saint, Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, The Persuaders. With The Saint and The Persuaders, actually, she appeared alongside Roger Moore. She also provided the voice of a character called Atlanta in Stingray.
Here we go.
So there you go.
Back to Jerry.
How do we get to Bond? Well, she had a difficult time in the early 60s. Her husband had suffered a heart attack, so they were low on money. And Terence Young actually turned her down because he said that, this is a ridiculous quote, she looked like she smelled of soap. I mean, what do you do with that? So rather than being a Bond girl, offered her Miss Moneypenny or Sylvia Trench. But she wasn't that comfortable of being in revealing outfits, and especially in Doctor No, she's in Sylvia Trench is in that in one of his shirts, isn't she? Pretty much that's it, it's all she wears. So yeah, she took the role of Moneypenny instead, which was 2 days' work at the rate of £100 a day. And she actually supplied her own clothes for that. Interesting that you say about the sort of the romantic undertones. Because there's a quote here from Lois Maxwell. And she said, "Sean and I and Terence decided on the background of the relationship between James Bond and Miss Moneypenny that when he was a tea boy, she was in a secretarial pool. They had gone off together for a lovely bank holiday weekend to a rose-covered cottage and had fully appreciated each other's qualities. But she realised that she allowed herself to, if she allowed herself to fall in love with him, he would probably break her heart. If he allowed to fall in love with her, he'd never get his 00. So that was the background of their cosy ups in the office. And that they really adored each other, but on the other hand, they're ambitious people. So they decided on that, and then that they're able to play that sort of knowing that that was the background. So that's quite interesting, and probably why we get such a good chemistry between the two characters. She also talks about the first time she met Connery. She said, "I had first met Sean in Cubby's office back at the beginning. He had that wonderful atmosphere of menace and moved, as Cubby said, like a panther. But he was still a poor young actor in a rumpled corduroy who looked like he lived in a bedsit. He had to be taught everything from how to dress, where to buy shirts and table manners. His Scottish accent was ironed out. In Doctor No, they had to film his dialogue one line at a time."
Blimey.
So it's remarkable. It's probably the reason why they did one film a year for 4 years. So yeah, in terms of taking the role, she said, Miss Moneypenny was the smallest part I've ever played, and I did it when my children were very young and my husband was very sick and I was very poor. So she had reasons for taking it, and like we've discovered, she, you know, hasn't had much on screen time, so the actual shoot days wouldn't have been that much at all. In 1967, she appeared in Operation Kid Brother, also known as OK Connery, with a lot of Bond alumni. So Bernard Lee's in it as well, and Sean Connery's brother, Neil. So in terms of Moneypenny, Lois Maxwell plays a very aggressive Moneypenny who actually has a machine gun. So can you imagine her official Moneypenny ever using a machine gun? No.
No.
In that same year, so in 1967, she played Moneypenny in a TV special called Welcome to Japan, Mr. Bond, which co-starred Kate O'Mara and Desmond Llewellyn. Have either of you ever seen this?
No.
No.
Right, so I watched this earlier. It's on YouTube. You can watch it there. It's quite good, actually, because it was made in time for the release of You Only Live Twice. It's basically a Match of the Day-style highlights package of the previous films that have come before it.
Sounds perfect.
So it is quite interesting. She's just sat at her desk explaining to somebody else who works there what Bond's like, and then they show clips. It's well worth a look, because it just collates it.
How
all
long
in,
is it?
In one place, an hour.
Blimey.
So in terms of the role of Moneypenny, it was nearly recast. We've talked about this in the Diamonds Are Forever episode, so you can go back and listen to that. It was nearly recast, but because of the confusion with, you know, the Bonds changing, we just had Lazenby, we'd come back to Connery, they wanted some form of continuity. So they agreed the pay dispute, and then it was too late on, so they had to sort of cobble together a scene. So the scene where they're at the port and Connery and Bond is on the way to Holland, they're not actually there together in the same place, which we did discuss in that episode. Guy Hamilton said about that, "With Miss Moneypenny and Lois Maxwell, we got to Diamonds Are Forever. I thought we must get her out of the office. So we managed to cook up a scene where Bond is at the border posing as someone else, and she shows up as a customs officer, and they have this really nice exchange." But yeah, so that's Moneypenny up until 1971.
Well, speaking of the most memorable money pennies. This one isn't. Barbara, I don't even know why we've got this. Barbara Boucher from Casino Royale 1967. Now, do you remember her in that film?
No.
I had to rewatch her scenes to remember who she was. She played, you'll remember one of the scenes she was in. She's the character who is trying to find Coop. So there's that big lineup of potential. And so she kisses them all.
Yes.
Right.
And Coop is the best kisser. So they end up shacking up. But she is apparently the daughter of the original Moneypenny. I'm presuming the one who worked with David Niven.
Right.
She's not really in it that much. She does a couple of scenes early on, and then I think she comes back later on during that ridiculous chaos scene at the end where everyone's just fighting randomly. There's not really much to go on with the story of Casino Royale. I don't know if we went into too much depth about her in the original podcast we did about it, but presumably there's something in there. So if you're desperately interested to find out more, go to that podcast. But I wouldn't bother. But interestingly, there's not a lot about Barbara Boucher talking about Bond. There is an interesting couple of interesting stories in Nobody Does It Better where she talks about the casting for the role. And it's this really long story, which is quite a horrible story, really, where she's basically trying to get roles in some films, and she keeps getting invited by the producers of the films to, like, oh, come to Paris and we'll do a casting session, but they're basically trying to get to the hotel room, and it happens I think two or three times.
Oh god.
And every one of them's just like, we'll just go to my hotel room first before we go and see the director and everything. So eventually she speaks to Charlie Kaufman, and he's chats to her, I think on a plane they meet and they chat, and she does a bit of reading on the plane, and I think he offers it to her, and she says, yeah, I'll take it straight away. And that's how she got the role in the film. But quite a long and twisted, not very nice story behind it. One nice story from Barbara Boucher working on Casino Royale is when she was in London, she wasn't from London. I think she lived at various places. She was actually originally from Germany. I know she wasn't. She was from Czechoslovakia. I'll go into that in a minute. But basically, she was in England, and it was sunny one day. So she decided she had to get out and sunbathe, and she went to Hyde Park. So she was in a bikini. She got arrested because this was 1966, 67. So you probably weren't allowed to do that. So she came back, and David Niven says, look, if you want to enjoy the sun, come with me to my family home in south of France, where his family were at the time. So David Niven used to go back there like whenever he wanted. As part of his contract, he could just go there whenever he liked. So he just fly back for two or three days. So he said, if you come with me, you know, they're not going to have a go at you because you're with me. And if I'm not there, then nothing's getting done. So she went over there. She spent a few days with him and the family, and she just sunbathed the whole time. So when she came back, she had a tan that was like far darker than the shots that she did beforehand. So they had to postpone the film shooting until she got rid of the tan. Just one of the many things happening on that set that just created more money. Think how ridiculous the pricing or the costing of that film was, and then you have to hold off shooting because somebody's got a tan because they've been sunbathing too much. But that's Casino Royale all over. It's not really a surprise. So a little bit about her life and who she is. So she is she's classed as a German-American person. She was born in 1943. She has been in quite a lot of film and television episodes over the time. A little bit more about that in a bit. But in more recent years, she has produced fitness videos and books, and she has a fitness studio. She was born in Reichenberg, which is part of Czechoslovakia that is part of Czech Republic now. And after World War II, she was placed in a resettlement camp in the American occupation zone in Germany. And eventually they got permission to move to the United States. One of her first roles was in a show called the KPIX or KPIX Dance Party, where she was just basically a dancer. And she was on there for like 3 years before eventually moving more into the film industry. She changed her name. What was her original name? Barbara Gutschke to Barbara Boucher because she thought it would sound better and more continental. And then she had a successful modelling career where she actually appeared semi-nude in a couple of editions of Playboy magazine. So yeah, for fear of being typecast, and I'm assuming it's for roles like the one that she had in Casino Royale, she moved to Italy and started making films over there. So the films that she's been in, not many, the only one that I know of, apart from Casino Royale 67, because a lot of them are Italian or quite old, not very well-known films, she was in Gangs of New York in 2002. That's the only film I'd heard of from the list that she'd been in. But in television, she had done quite a bit. So she was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. She's in Star Trek, the original series. And I think she plays quite an important character. She's quite early on. But that's probably led to the more of the typecasting stuff, because we all know what the women in Star Trek were like with Captain Kirk. Not really much to go on there. But yeah, definitely not a memorable part of the Moneypenny history, one that you neither of you remembered. So yeah, that's Barbara Boucher, Casino Royale 67.
Back to Lois Maxwell. So as we know, Lois Maxwell continued as Miss Moneypenny throughout all seven Roger Moore James Bond films. So it makes their Bond Moneypenny relationship the most enduring screen partnership for the characters. That, like I said, they already knew each other from RADA, and she said in an interview once that one time he played Henry V and I played his uncle with a long red beard. So that's an image for you. We were great pals even then at the age of 17. As Bond, he had a very hard act to follow, and he did an excellent job, although he's best at playing Cary Grant type comedy roles. Her favourite of Roger's dramatic roles, she said, was in Gold. As Brendan mentioned, they'd appeared in The Saint and The Persuaders together. I'll sort of skip over this bit a little bit because we'll cover all of Roger's films at some point. But in Octopussy, you'll probably remember that Moneypenny is given an assistant, Penelope Smallbone.
We had a chat about this earlier. We were thinking, I wonder if he's going to mention that. But yeah, good. Yeah.
Played by Michaela Clavell, who apparently is the daughter of the filmmaker James Clavell, who wrote 1958's The Fly, The Great Escape, and Shogun, which became a TV miniseries and video game. So there you go. But thinking back on this, obviously having a younger model brought in for Octopussy in 1983, which, like, what is 20 years since she started playing the role, Lois Maxwell recalled, "I suppose I was jealous of the girl, subconsciously at least." And she thought, right, this is the push. Next, it will be the shove. I had to introduce her to Roger when he came in as Bond. Perhaps it was the shock of having some new dialogue, but when it came out, what came out was, "James, may I introduce my assistant, Miss Smallbush?" Roger didn't miss a beat. He had these carnations in his hands and he just let them droop and he said, "Moneypenny, we all know where your mind is at." So classic Roger Moore. Wit there, but obviously I think the filmmakers were thinking of making Penelope Smallbone a recurring character, someone who could take over from Lois Maxwell, but this never happened. She only appeared that once and was never seen again. So for The Living Daylights, obviously she returned for A View to a Kill, but for The Living Daylights, the decision was made that at 60 years old, Lois Maxwell was getting too old to play Moneypenny. So looking back on this experience, Maxwell said, "One night Cubby called up and said, 'I'm sorry, Lois, but we won't be using you in the next Bond film. I wanted to let you tell you myself, and I didn't want you to just get a letter or hear about it in the press.' And that was very kind of him. I said, 'Well, I realise it would be sort of silly to be making goo-goo eyes at Timothy Dalton.' But she wasn't going down without a fight, and she suggested at this point that she could stay on and play M. She said, 'I want to play M. Bond can arrive at Moneypenny's office to find a new secretary, and he'll say, 'You're not Miss Moneypenny.' And then he looks at her watch and says, 'Commander Bond, you're late for your appointment with M. You better get in there immediately.' She goes to the door, and there is Moneypenny. I thought the public would really like it. But Cubby said, 'Isn't going to work, Lois, because traditionally the head of MI5 has always been a man.' And to which Lois replied, 'Traditionally, the Prime Minister of Great Britain has always been a man.' That was obviously when Thatcher was in power. So just to sort of wrap up on Lois Maxwell and her personal life, like you said, her husband, Peter Marriott, had been quite poorly in the 1960s, and he actually never recovered fully and died in 1973. And she returned to her home in Canada to live there. And she actually wrote a weekly column for the Toronto Sun from 1979 to 1994 under the name of Miss Moneypenny. And while in Canada, she worked in the textile industry. But in 1994, she returned to live in the UK to be near her daughter, Melinda. Her last film role came in the 2001 film The Fourth Angel, opposite Jeremy Irons and Jason Priestley. And in 2001, she had cancer surgery and moved to Perth, Australia, to be near her son, Christian. And then in 2007, she died aged 80. And talking to the BBC at the time, Roger Moore said, she was always fun and she was wonderful to be with. She was absolutely perfect casting. It was a great pity that after I moved out of Bond, they didn't take her on to continue in the Timothy Dalton films. Call me old-fashioned if you will, but there'll only ever be one Miss Moneypenny for me. So there you have it. Lois Maxwell's time came to an end with A View to a Kill.
Yeah, talking about the Moneypenny that we think of as the Moneypenny, I think I don't think it's Lois Maxwell the whole time, because I do think that Roger years are a strange dynamic between those two.
Yes.
And it shifts quite a bit. In the Sean Connery years, the dynamic is always the same and it works. But in the Roger Moore ones, I think especially in the earlier ones, it looks strange because she does look older than him when he first comes in to play Bond. And then later on, when he looks old and she looks old, it's another strange dynamic because it really draws attention to the fact that the women he's sort of having these relationships with are significantly younger. It drives it home for me that he probably should be with Moneypenny at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely true. It's weird because I've been watching Moonraker a bit recently because we're doing that as an episode soon. And she's significantly, obviously, she's like 20 years older than she is when we've seen her in Dr. No from Russia with Love. And it's noticeable. I mean, it works, but I think they're right to recast it when they went younger with Timothy Dalton, for sure.
Yeah, it's charming. It's just when the Sean Connery ones, you can see that he could find her attractive, and it could just be the situation they're in that stops them from doing it. But in the Roger Moore ones, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like he's just being nice a lot of the time, and she knows it, and it's like, oh, James. But yeah, it's definitely it's an interesting one to follow the dynamic over the course of the films between those two.
Yeah.
Coffee? Medium sweet. Two, medium sweet.
Thanks for listening. We hope you're enjoying the James Bond A to Z podcast. Remember, if you want to support the show, we have a coffee page at ko-fi.com/JamesBondA to Z, where you can buy us a coffee for just £3 or for £3 a month. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
What's the matter?
I don't feel so good. I feel so sleepy.
Damn coffee. Is that all it does?
So on to Never Say Never Again, which
really
is technically an official Eon movie, but we'll cover it here. So Moneypenny was played by Pamela Salem, a British actor who was born in India. She had been in the first Great Train Robbery alongside Sean Connery prior to this, and her Moneypenny is not really on screen that long at all, and comes after he's just been told that he's got to erase free radicals, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Before he goes to the spa.
Yes, and she shows a lot of concern, the wrong sort of concern, really. She's so worried. It's quite a naive portrayal of Moneypenny. So there's nothing really to talk about. It's such a small role. In terms of the rest of her career, she's been in Doctor Who, so Butler, you'll probably recognise her.
Probably a massive fan.
She was in The Robots of Death. She played Twos. and she was in Remembrance of the Daleks in 1988 as Professor Rachel Jensen.
Mm. Well, now you mention it,
good
yeah.
role.
A role that she actually played in the audio dramas, the more recent audio dramas. And she auditioned for the Fourth Doctor's companion, Leela, but that went to Louise Jameson. Don't know which Fourth Doctor is. Tom Baker, it's the only one I know. Is that him?
Yeah, Fourth Doctor, yeah.
Yay, got it. So, yeah, not a lot really there, unfortunately. Sorry.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
When you mentioned Never Say Never Again, I was trying to think, is there actually a Moneypenny? Is she called Moneypenny? Surely she can't be...
Yeah, because remember, McClory had the rights. Oh, of course. They're allowed to.
Well, yeah, that's... I looked at a book picture as you were talking, and I'm still none the wiser.
Very, very brief, isn't it?
It is. So it literally is that conversation. That's it. It's like one line.
Okay, so let's go into another, perhaps less memorable, Miss Moneypenny. I'm assuming this, but let's just verify. Caroline Bliss. Caroline Bliss was the Moneypenny that it took over when Dalton came in for Living Daylights and License to Kill. She was starring against Timothy Dalton at the age of 26 in this, so they brought in a significantly younger Moneypenny than they had previously had with Lois Maxwell. I think from my view, and I've just watched a load of clips about her, she sort of is still in the same mould as what you expect from Moneypenny. They haven't really gone away from the original style of it very much, and for me it doesn't work particularly well. According to Bliss, it was her, she came up with the idea to wear glasses to distance herself from the from Lois Maxwell's portrayal of Moneypenny. Not sure that's really, maybe should have gone a few steps further for that. So I won't go too much in depth about what she was like in the actual films. I think for me it's just a bit flat, really. There's no real chemistry between her and Dalton. She's got this sort of air of being really serious and just very formal with him. Doesn't feel cheeky, doesn't feel relaxed. You just don't... I think there's a point where he slaps her. You don't see him actually slap her, but you can hear the slap. Just seems odd. She doesn't seem to enjoy it or doesn't seem to mind it. She just carries on what she's doing. So interestingly, she actually, this will come up in a bit, she was actually childhood friends with Samantha Bond, who took over from her in the role. And she didn't really know about this until she took over. But because they had been friends for a long time, since they were 11 years old, apparently, she was very complimentary about Samantha Bond taking over. And she says, I'm just glad it has gone to someone I love and who needs the money. Little bit about Caroline Bliss. She was born in 1961 and she trained at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre. She was the granddaughter of a composer called Sir Arthur Bliss, who was apparently former master of the Queen's music. And she's married to an author and actor called Andy Secombe. Butler, do you know who Andy Secombe is?
Not off the top of my head.
He is he's the voice of Watto in Star Wars.
Whoa, here we go.
There you go. So you really should have known that. Her filmography.
Fine.
Her filmography is not particularly exciting. There's a few bits and pieces in there. She was in a film called Charles and Diana, playing Diana. Obviously, she looks like she'd be good at the role of Diana. I'm not going to watch it. I've never seen it. She was in Ruth Rendell, A Case of Coincidence. But apart from that, nothing really major in terms of filmography career. But she did do quite a lot in theatre. So she did Blood Brothers, she did Romeo and Juliet, The Invisible Man, and The Night They Raided Minsky's. So not a massive career, but that's all I've got on Caroline Bliss. What are your views on Caroline Bliss?
Like I said, I think you're right. I think she's not. She's too close in style to Lois Maxwell to make too much of an impression.
I think there's a level of it where the Moneypenny, and obviously they cast her at the same time as Dalton, so she would have been cast for Dalton, where you cast the Moneypenny.
Would she though? Because Dalton came in late, didn't he?
Well, maybe, but I don't know. I wouldn't be sure if she was a big enough role to not change for a different Bond. But even then, if you look at some of the earlier Bonds, it seems like the Connery one, they clearly work together. They've chosen an actor who can play off Bond, and it feels natural. I think in this case, it looks like they've chosen one that could work opposite Dalton and feel natural. But if you think about it, Dalton would be very formal. He wouldn't be able to do what Connery and Maxwell do because he's just not like that. So maybe they wanted her to be more formal and a little bit more, straight than so it worked alongside Dalton. But yeah, I just feel like it doesn't feel like there's any sort of relationship there.
I'd have liked to have seen her play opposite Roger Moore. 40-year age gap.
He'd have just made fun of her, wouldn't he? That would have worked perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we go. Caroline Bliss.
Yeah, and Caroline Bliss lasted, like I said, two films. And then when it was time for a reboot for GoldenEye, a new Moneypenny was brought in and played by Samantha Bond. Now, we covered a fair bit of this in our GoldenEye episode, so you can go back to that. But yeah, just as a summary, she was born in 1961 and is the daughter of the actor Philip Bond and TV producer Pat Sundays. She was brought up in London and studied acting at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. Has had a very, very good stage and screen career. She's well known for appearing in Rumpole of the Bailey, Miss Marple, and has worked extensively at the RSC. She played Juliet to Kenneth Branagh's Romeo in one of her early RSC roles, and Lady Macbeth to Sean Bean's Macbeth. Mm. Sean Bean, who obviously would later appear with her in GoldenEye. Talking about playing Moneypenny, she said, "Nobody was going to knock me playing Moneypenny if Judy was playing M." She raised the credibility for everyone. But like you say, she knew Caroline Bliss, so she said that she wouldn't take the role didn't want them to announce it until she had a chance to speak to Caroline herself. Because like you said, they'd known each other from school, and also they'd also been to the Bristol Old Vic together. Caroline Bliss said that when she got the role, she avoided her for a few weeks. And she said, "I'm so sorry, darling, I'm so sorry." And then I burst out laughing. She said, "Look, I'm hoping to become a mum, and I'm thrilled it's going to be one of my best friends playing Moneypenny." So Samantha Bond said that she had been asked to audition for The Living Daylights to play Moneypenny, but had been discouraged by her agent. But the Moneypenny that Samantha Bond plays is, I guess it's an update of the character for the 90s. We've got a new M, who is Judi Dench, who doesn't suffer Bond's BS easily. The fact that she's a woman makes a difference in their relationship. You know, she calls him a sexist, misogynist dinosaur. And this sort of empowers Moneypenny to be more of a, I think she describes it as a sparring partner for Bond. Mm. And so there's a bit more of an adversarial quality to their relationship. And again, as like Lois Maxwell, Samantha Bond said, "If you rolled all four Bond films into one, it's still the smallest part I've ever played. But it's the character that's iconic rather than anything I did with it." And actually on the first film, GoldenEye, it just took her 2 hours to film her part. Interestingly, though, she did also read the audiobook for John Gardner's GoldenEye novelisation. So if you want more of Samantha Bond, you can check that out. In fact, she does a lot of audiobooks, which is quite interesting.
Great voice.
Yeah. Mm. She returned as Moneypenny in Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough, and in Die Another Day, where famously she finally gets to be the Moneypenny that kisses James Bond.
Oh, ridiculous. Does she? I was hoping you weren't going to talk about this.
In virtual reality, yeah. Which for me, I think is a huge disservice to the character.
It's an unnecessary delving into a character that you don't need, isn't it?
Just doing it because they could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather
yeah.
than because it makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it was quite a late addition to the script. So as we talked about on Die Another Day, there was a lot of meddling with that story as it was being made. A lot of unnecessary adjustments to it, and that's why it sort of is a bit of a shambles in the end. But talking about it not long after, I think it was in 2006 she was talking about it. She says, "I'm the only one who got the snog, and I think that's important, and I hope to hold that mantle for a long, long time. It's always sad that one has to reflect that it was, in fact, a fantasy sequence." Mm. But yeah, I just wanted to say, actually, in terms of the relationship between Moneypenny and Bond in general, do you think it's like genuinely romantic, or is it just like harmless flirting?
I think there's got to be an element of, I don't think it's romantic. I don't think either of them is really like, you know, besotted with the other one or harbours any deep desires, but I think there has to be a certain level of attractiveness between them to make it believable. So you've got to believe that, you know, they could, but they don't want to really. It's just something they have in the back of their head. But
I think it's a game of tug of war.
Yeah.
Basically. Because depending on what film you watch, one of them is either more keen than the other. Like, if Moneypenny's willing to say, oh, let's make plans then, and then Bond will back off, there are scenes where Bond says, yeah, let's do something. She's like, oh, well, I can't. So I think they're just playing each other
off. But I think he's always, you know, you know what he's like. He's never, ever going to act on anything he actually says because he's not that bothered. He's got other things to do. Whereas there's a chance that she would, but she knows that she's always too smart to make that mistake, isn't she, to even do anything. And that's when I think it works best. And I think Samantha Bond is excellent at it because they have her and Brosnan have a lovely relationship, especially in the earlier films. And it's believable. It's like they do get on. They're sort of like mates that have a little bit of a spark for each other, but also sort of dislike each other a little bit, and it just works very well.
Yeah, the scene. Did you watch the clip of the Moneypenny clip in Tomorrow Never Dies when they're in the car?
No.
And they're talking about pumping her for information.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Pumping Paris Carver for information, and Moneypenny says, "Well, you just have to decide how much pumping you're going to do," and then puts the window up, and it's like it's fantastic because it's just as sassy.
Yeah.
As Bond is.
What's that most famous line where I can't remember what he says?
It's when Bond's in Cambridge.
No, where she ends up says, "As far as I'm aware, you've never been on me."
That's Goldeneye, isn't it? It's, but yeah, there's that when he's talking to the linguist in Cambridge.
Danish. Yeah, I'm brushing up on little Danish.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, we'll come back to that actually. Let's pick that point up when we come to like the future of Moneypenny, because I think there's a lot to talk about there. But after Die Another Day, she had hoped to make a fifth Bond film with Pierce Brosnan, and she told Andrew Marr in 2006, "I think he probably would have, and if he had done the fifth, I would have been delighted to have done it with him. But I didn't want to go on without him." So she was happy that when the series rebooted that they, she wasn't called back to do any more. So since then, she's appeared many times on lots of different things, worked with Judi Dench quite a few times. She's appeared in the David Hare play, Amy's View. But yeah, so they were in that play on the West End before it moved to Broadway, and she actually got a Tony nomination for that. She sort of reprised Moneypenny in 2004. Have you seen this? So there's a video that the London Olympic bid made in 2004, selling the benefits of having the Olympics in London, and she's on the Thames with Roger Moore.
I saw this. I've not watched it. I saw the screen grab you sent.
Yeah, so she gives him a briefcase, and there's sort of like this look between them that, like, you know, she's giving him secret intelligence or whatever, and they look stood over the bridge, and she opens up the briefcase, they both look in, and the reveal is it's Bond's sandwiches and a banana, and that's the joke. So she sort of reprised the role in 2004. After Bond, she's appeared in Distant Shores, which apparently is a very popular drama that got cancelled after two series. The Sarah Jane Adventures, that's a Doctor Who spin-off. She's also been in Midsummer Murders, Heartbeat, New Trick, Silent Witness, Outnumbered. And then probably most famously, she was Lady Rosamund Painswick in Downton Abbey from 2010 to 2015.
Yes.
And she's going to be in the new Downton Abbey movie,
right,
which is out this year, if you're listening, in 2022. So that is Samantha Bond. But Samantha Bond, I will say, I think she's great as Moneypenny. She is memorable. I'll give her that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, on to the Moneypenny Diaries.
The what?
It's official canon, this, of the Inflowing publications. It's a series of short novels and some novella stories that go through the life of Miss Moneypenny. So it's written from a perspective of an editor. There's like an editor that has compiled all these together. It's Samantha Weinberg, the author, writing under the pseudonym of Kate Westbrook, who is this fictional editor. And there's a trilogy of novels, first off. So starting from 2005, The first one was called Guardian Angel, and this fills in gaps between Honor Majesty's Secret Service and You Only Live Twice, and pads out a full backstory for Moneypenny. And that's where we are. It's revealed that Moneypenny's first name is Jane. Then in 2006, the Moneypenny Diaries Secret Servant. So this was at the time of The Man with the Golden Gun. So you've got the Secret Service is in absolute turmoil with an official being on trial for treason and being defected to Russia. So that follows her throughout that. And then in the last one, it's called Final Fling. And this fictional editor, Kate Westbrook, is trying to publish these diaries. But everyone that she speaks to about them is trying to stop her. So that's the concept of that. So that's quite interesting. Quite an interesting angle to go at. And then there's two short stories. Well, the first one was published in Tatler in November 2006 issue. It's called For Your Eyes Only, James. And this is about a weekend shared between Bond and Moneypenny in 1956. So similar to what Lois Maxwell had idea about the backstory that she had. And then the other one was published in 2006 issue of The Spectator. It's called Moneypenny's First Date with Bond. As you can imagine, relays the story of the time they first meet. That's the Moneypenny Diaries, which I'm sure will be coming to Amazon pretty soon.
Yeah, surprise me. Okay, going on to the most recent Moneypenny, and that is Naomi Harris, one that needs little introduction for probably anyone listening to this, because she has been Moneypenny for the last three films. And interestingly, she's probably the Moneypenny that really has changed the most over the course of the series. She initially turns up in Skyfall, and she's actually a field agent, as you remember, the start, go through the start of that whole film. But by the end of the opening sequence, she ends up shooting Bond and he disappears. So she's in the rest of that film, and by the end of it, you find out that she is actually Moneypenny, because you don't know that at the start. She's just called Eve earlier on in the film. And during the process of being involved in the Skyfall film, they kept that very secret up until the point where the film really came out. So there was speculation around the fact that she'd been cast as Miss Moneypenny, but it was never confirmed by anyone. And even Naomi Harris dismissed it whenever she was asked in the early days. I don't think it was a surprise. I remember watching that, and I don't think I initially thought it. I didn't really plan it, but you kind of worked out midway through that she probably would be. And yeah, she's very good. She plays a sort of I suppose more mobile Moneypenny. She's actually involved.
She's a field agent, isn't she?
She was a field agent, and then she became the Moneypenny that we know by the end of the Skyfall. So in Skyfall, Spectre and No Time to Die, she is a lot more involved with actual goings on. She still sort of turns up and stuff, doesn't she? She's not in the workplace. She's in the office all the time, but she gets involved with his things he's going on outside of it, because she sort of does secret stuff with Q. So she's quite heavily involved in the plot, and she's actually a fundamental character in driving the plot forward, as opposed to just being a character that sits at a desk and speaks to Bond a couple of times. So gets a little bit more screen time than pretty much any other Moneypenny that's existed. A few bits on it. So she apparently knew the ending of No Time to Die quite early on. She was one of the few people that had the real script, and apparently some people didn't get the real ending, so they couldn't leak what had happened at the end of the film. So she says she was very proud and very honoured that they trusted her with that. Interestingly, she thinks that Olivia Colman would make a perfect Moneypenny in a follow-up film. Although she has said she'd love to continue playing Moneypenny if she had an opportunity to. A couple of things. This is quite a big quote, but it's a really useful one from Barbara Broccoli, where she says, the character of Eve Moneypenny, as written, was basically a field agent with a lot of sass. But it wasn't until Naomi came in that we really saw the potential that this character could be something entirely new in terms of Bond films. She's very resourceful. She gives Bond a real hard time, but you still manage to have a tremendous affection for her. And there is a wonderful flirtatiousness between them. She can hold her own with Bond. She's an extraordinary actress. And Sam Mendes says, in recent years, the Bond films have featured two girls, one an exotic type and the other a homegrown type. Naomi manages to be both. So in terms of the Bond legacy, I think she's probably one of you were talking earlier, Butler, about what's the Bond you, which is the Moneypenny you think about when you think about Bond. And for the last 20 years, anybody who's come in at that point, that's Naomi Harris, isn't it? She's the one that people think of as Moneypenny. And I say 20 years, probably about 14 years, because she wasn't in the first two. But before then, she's got quite an illustrious career. She started as a child actor, and she was in Simon and the Witch in 1987.
Ooh.
And she's been in lots of other things. She was in 28 Days Later. She was in the Pirates of the Caribbean films as Callisto, I believe.
Yeah, she was like a mystic, wasn't she?
Yeah. Winnie Mandela in Mandela Long Walk to Freedom. She was also, and I didn't know this. I did know. So she plays Shriek in Spider-Man, in Venom, Let There Be Carnage. She was also starred in Moonlight, which is a bit of a big deal, that one.
Oscar nominated for that.
Yeah, and I think she got a number of nominations for that, Golden Globe, BAFTA, and an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress. She got an OBE in 2017 for services to drama, so doing a damn fine job. She, a little bit about her earlier life, she was born in 1976 in Islington. Her mother was a screenwriter on EastEnders. And she also went to Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. Very strange link.
Same as the other ones. Yeah.
Very strange link. It's almost like they've got a Moneypenny lesson training schedule school on there at some point.
Yeah.
Interestingly, at 11, she was diagnosed with scoliosis, and it progressed into her teen years, which necessitated a spinal fusion. And apparently it took a month to fully recover, and she had to learn to walk again. So aside from that, there's a few other films. After the Sunset, Collateral Beauty, Rampage. I haven't seen that one, but I think it's got The Rock in it.
Rubbish.
From memory.
Yeah.
Television, she was in The Tomorrow People in the 1992 version. I might go back and watch that. I always think I need to rewatch a bit of The Tomorrow People. Dinotopia and The Man Who Fell to Earth. And
that's a new one, isn't it? That's the sequel to the David Bowie film.
That's right. That's is that not out yet? That's coming out later this year.
No.
And
or it might be on the TV in America at the moment, I think.
Okay. And then she's also been in 007 Legends of the Computer Game and Fable 3, which is a fantastic game that came out in 2010. And she's done a little bit of theatre work as well, including Frankenstein. So yeah, that's Naomi Harris. Definitely one of the most interesting deviations for the Moneypenny character, and one that they've clearly put a lot of thought into. Like, they've really made some effort into changing that character and how she works in the story. What are your views on Naomi Harris's Moneypenny?
My feeling is with Moneypenny, Naomi Harris's Moneypenny, is that the way that they reinvented her in Skyfall became a rod for her back, in that she came in to Skyfall as a full grown character. You know, she was given a name, she was given a plot, she was integral to the story. You know, she was sort of working very closely with Bond throughout the movie, and they had a romantic liaison and all that sort of stuff. And then, unfortunately, how do you relegate that to a background character? It almost becomes doing a disservice to the character.
Yeah.
It's like making someone, you know, the co-lead, and then telling them in the next film they're not welcome. So unfortunately, you get with Spectre, you get that whole sort of, what's it called, the Scooby-Doo mystery gang like element of all the people in MI6 working around Bond.
Yeah, the only people he works with.
Yeah, and then obviously in No Time to Die, then you got a lot of complaints of, you know, Moneypenny gets nothing to do. And actually, she never did get anything to do in the previous films. And it's only because they elevated her so much in Skyfall. And that's not to say that Naomi Harris did a bad job with it. She did a terrific job, and I think she's brilliant in Skyfall, and she's one of the key elements in that. But it's very hard then to come back from that and then sort of relegate her to a desk job, which she sort of gets. Like, a lot of No Time to Die, she's just sort of in the background hovering.
Yeah, you kind of want to go the other way, don't you? Start her off on the desk, and then by No Time to Die, have her, you know, develop the character.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, that's the way to do it, because they didn't need to make her Moneypenny either in Skyfall.
No.
Why do that? And also, watch the clip earlier. The reveal is awful.
Oh, yeah. Mm. It's not very exciting, is it?
No. It's really clunky dialogue, actually. Mm. Oh, we've not formally been introduced.
You just kind of go, Come on, are you? Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose that works.
Well, it doesn't make it. Yeah, it has no relevance to the story other than it referencing something.
There's a lot of Skyfall.
The people in.
That does that, isn't it? It's a big reveal film. Like, you know, here's Q, here's some other things that fans will remember and like. And yeah, it does muddy it a bit.
And it's a portender for the whole Blofeld thing, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm Ernst Stavre Blofeld, and it means nothing in that film.
Inspector.
Yeah. And it means nothing. Her being Moneypenny really means nothing in Skyfall.
Yeah.
That's my feeling. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think had they have not done that to her, had they have made her another character, they could have gone down such a much more interesting route.
Well, it's almost like she could have been a precursor to Nomi. Didn't really come out. She must be quite annoying to be in the film with Nomi and go, well, that's kind of what I was doing before.
That's basically what, yeah.
Okay, well, that is Naomi Harris.
Yes, so I guess just sort of to wrap things up then, what is the future for Moneypenny? Because obviously we don't know what the future for James Bond is, but what is there left for Moneypenny to do? And is there still a place for a character like that in the future of Bond?
Well, I think that I think learn from Skyfall and don't go down that route. Don't make it a thing. Don't make it like, oh, the fans will love to find that out. This is Moneypenny. Don't do that. Either have her or don't have her from the start. But I think there's a fundamental issue now with, you know, the way that we're viewing gender roles in films and stuff like that. It's almost like an outdated role to have, sort of assistant to M. So I think it would have to be changed, whether it's a man or, you know, they change it in some way like that. But I think going back to the old format of a Bond and a woman that works for M who has a slight relationship with him, I don't think it sits very well in the modern day.
It's problematic, isn't it?
It's just very simple. It oversimplifies it. And yeah, it's an old style thing, a receptionist, basically, who fancies the cool guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a well-worn joke, isn't it? That's all it is.
Yeah, I mean, you've been dragged out. You could do it and just remove the romanticism and have it like a, you know, that's not the point of it. But then would it work? Then it's just a, you know, another character who's...
Well, essentially, they did it in Casino Royale. It was Villiers, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, there you go. That shows how good that works, because I've completely forgotten Villiers.
It could... I think the only way to do it now is to elevate the position of Moneypenny beyond the secretary, right? So make her more of a Tanner type character.
Yeah.
So a chief of staff sort of person who liaises with M on their behalf, on whoever plays M's behalf.
Yeah.
And have their relationship. I think changing Moneypenny to a man, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Mm. I think... You know, as Eon always says, you know, Bond will always be a man. I feel like there needs to be that female character within MI6 to break things up a bit. But I don't think there's any harm in the relationship between Bond and Moneypenny being more like, you know, a work friends sort of relationship.
Mm.
One where there is sort of not an overt like attraction between them, but like a camaraderie between the two of them.
Yeah. I suppose that's kind of what they tried to do for most of Naomi Harris's tenure.
But the problem was that they added the sexual nature of their relationship front and centre in Skyfall, right?
Yeah, they're definitely... Skyfall's the problem here, isn't it, with that character. Thinking about it and what we talked through, I almost think that you don't need it. It's almost like if you do another Moneypenny... in the next films, for most of the fans watching it, that's a callback to the Craig era, not a callback to the old era. And if that's the case, you don't need it, because it's not like a legacy character. It's just, is this the new Naomi Harris character? So maybe it's time to just change it up and try something a bit different. Didn't need it in Casino Royale, did it? Didn't miss it.
No, but then Casino Royale was sort of clearing the decks, wasn't it? And then Skyfall was the legacy one, wasn't it, where it brought back everything together under one roof and you know, sort of reminded fans of what they loved about the series. But I think I just think it was a misstep. It works in that film, but it becomes very hard. It's like something that you can say about a lot of the Craig era, which is that they paint themselves into a corner with what is possible and what is achievable.
And also, if you've got a story arc, then that's the problem. If it's a one-shot film, then Moneypenny has to be what she's previously like, where it's the same character in each one. You can't develop the character in any way at all anyway.
Yeah.
Well, my issue with the more recent films is the leaning on M, Q, Moneypenny without that feeling that there is a bigger 00 section going on. Like, remember the old films, they'd always mention, oh, 005 has been killed.
Yeah.
And like, you had this feeling that it was much bigger than that. And we're just seeing a little snapshot of Bond going into Moneypenny's office, going to see M, and that all the other 00s are doing that. But we're just following Bond. Whereas the more recent Craig films, you just feel like, that's it. It's just these four characters.
Yeah.
What about if they went like a comedy route and they got like... someone like Miranda Hart to play Moneypenny.
Well, Olivia Colman.
I don't think Olivia Colman could be M, right?
She could definitely be M.
I think you could have an older, that would shake it up a bit, an older Moneypenny who's maybe an old field agent and she knows a lot more than Bond. So she's like a wiser, there's no sort of relationship. She's always making fun of him for his wily ways. But... yeah, I don't know if the comedy route works.
No. Comedy, I mean, I was playing devil's advocate there by suggesting comedy.
A really clumsy Moneypenny falling over in the office.
Yeah, like an Amy Schumer type. Or like a Bridget Jones type who always comes in like hungover and...
That's got charm, actually.
Has it got charm?
What Renée Zellweger's doing.
Well, I mean, I'd love to hear other people's suggestions, like where they would like to see Moneypenny go next. Like, can it ever go back to a Lois Maxwell type where, you know, there's some harmless flirting between the two? I just can't see that working anymore.
No.
I feel like society would reject it.
It might work if you had, say, they went for a younger Bond, like quite a young Bond, and they had a young Moneypenny, so they're sort of on the same level and their romantic sort of chatter isn't associated with any sort of levels of superiority or stuff. I think that's problematic. But say it's a Bond who's just come out of the, you know, training, and he's just flirting with all these women who are the same age as him. That might work, but there's certainly a sort of issue with the, you know, people in positions of power and the secretarial staff, which just doesn't sit well.
No. Maybe it's like what Lois Maxwell originally said, you know, they come up, Bond and Moneypenny come up through training with each other.
Yeah.
If they do go like further back than we did with Casino Royale and it becomes a training, you know, Bond being recruited, then Moneypenny could be the one by his side. And that would almost become a way of building on that relationship through, a 3 to 5 film arc. So by the fourth or fifth film, Moneypenny really does get to step into the fray and become the one that works alongside Bond. That could be a way of doing it.
Yeah, right? The relationship you want is a Harry and Hermione, to give you the Harry Potter reference.
What's this?
Sorry.
I wasn't expecting that.
I was just trying to think of other like male-female roles where people have grown up together and like,
yeah,
that's where there's no romantic at all.
What about Mulder and Scully type?
That's still too much. Yeah, you want it's hard to get that balance, isn't it? That's why it's easier just to go, no, scrap it all.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have to have it. It's one of the cornerstones of the series, isn't it?
Right, Casino Royale is one of the best films of the series and it hasn't got Moneypenny.
That's true. It's true.
And
it's true.
Quantum.
No, don't use that as an example.
But yeah, I mean, I guess people can send in their suggestions for who they'd like to see as the new Money Penny and how they would like to move things on.
And please feel free to come up with a far better way to explain it than Harry and Hermione.
Aye, people will love that.
Right, let's wrap things up there then. And yeah, if people want to email their suggestions for the future for Money Penny, where should they email us?
podcast@jamesbondaz.co.uk.
And if they want to find us on social media to berate us,
at James Bond A to Z on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
And as we've been banging on, you can support the show on Ko-fi by buying us a coffee for £3, one-off payment, or a recurring payment, and that helps us just keep the show going.
Or a mint julep.
Or a mint julep, or a Havana cigar. That is ko-fi.com/JamesBondAZ. That's where you'll find us. We are still on the letter M. We've got more episodes to come on this current topic. We're going a bit loose and free and easy on the running order at the moment. So it could be anything from Roger Moore to Moonraker to the character M next. So keeping you on your toes. But thank you very much for listening. If you've listened to this all the way through, we appreciate you. Please tell your friends about the James Bond A to Z podcast and leave us a rating on Spotify and iTunes. And it just remains for me to say that the James Bond A to Z podcast will return next week.
Catch you guys later.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy, and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingemels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
Well, I must say you become more beautiful every day.
I am over here.
Oh, of course you are.
And this is Miss Penelope Smallbone, my new assistant.
Miss Smallbone? What can I say, Moneypenny? Except that she is as attractive and as charming.
As I used to be?
I didn't say that.
Oh, you're such a flatterer, James.
Oh, Moneypenny, you know there never has been, and there never will be anybody but you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.